It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 303 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. There are some comics creators who are just plain out fun to talk with. And this week's episode, I get the chance to interview Alexander Bankita from Fright Comics, who has created two really wonderful books. Captives and Champions of Earth come from his company, and they're both really creative and interesting. They don't do anything that I expect, which I really love, being an experienced comic reader as I am. We talk about how we got all the creative teams together and what kind of things we'd expect from these projects in the future. And along the way, we have some fun just talking with each other, which is something I always enjoy. And I think that you'll be glad to listen to as well. There's a lot to get to. So let's get on with the show. I'm happy to welcome to the podcast Alexander Bankita from Fright Comics, who has created two really great comics that I really enjoy, Captives and Champions of Earth. How are you doing today, Alex?
I'm wonderful. Thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure. I'm excited to be here.
Well, it's good to talk with you because I've read your books and I really enjoy them. I think they're very creative and not what I expect a lot of the times, which I really love. I love when somebody can surprise me. So why don't we start off by talking about how you got into comics? And we were talking a little bit before I started to record that you're a big fan of anime. Did that influence you into making comics?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think when I was a kid, I was just really into video games. And if you're into video games, you can't help but start to float over into anime. It's just natural because a lot of the big video games come out of Japan. So I started to float over into anime, and then when I was younger, I watched a ton of cartoons. I was like a Cartoon Network fanatic. I watched cartoons all day, and then I actually originally wanted to be an animator, and then I got really into anime, and I was like, oh, I want to make Japanese anime. That was like my goal. And then I think over time in college and other things, I started to branch out, and I found that I'd rather make comics. Because what I really love about making comics is that you can kind of make anything you want at a kind of realistic budget. Versus if you want to make a cartoon, it's like, well, do you have millions of dollars? Mm-hmm. You know, and nobody will green light that. So I think the creative freedom of making comics and all that kind of stuff. But I did like what you said a second ago, how I surprised you, because I feel like I started making – part of the reason when I make comics too is I find for me – there's a lot of stuff missing in the industry. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of kinds of books I don't see anymore. Lots of genres that aren't explored in the way that I like. So I almost feel like when I make comics, I almost make them for myself. Mm-hmm. Because I just find that the way I approach entertainment or what I find entertaining or interesting is either out of style or it's from a different place. So I kind of brought that to what I do.
Well, nobody wants to see the same old thing over and over. I've been reading comics for decades, and I don't really want to see the same story told over and over. That's one of the things I like about your books is you're going to do things that I don't expect and I haven't seen before. And we'll get into those because I think that's you were talking about things that you don't see very much. And I think the kind of take that you put on comics is something that the industry could frankly use right about now.
Well, let's explore that. What do you mean by that? Because I really like that compliment. So what do you mean by that?
Well, we'll get into some of the details of it. I'll start with talking about Champions of Earth, which is – we can start with that one and go to Captives later.
Sure.
But Champions of Earth to me was not what I expected. Of course, you title a book Champions of Earth, you expect Superman, Batman, or Avengers-type characters, and that's not what we get in this comic. It's very different characters. You know, they set themselves up as heroes, but you can tell right by looking at that front cover and their expressions on their faces, you know that they are not necessarily the tried-and-true heroes we've seen in the past. There are people, you know, cheering for them, and they're kind of smirking at each other.
Right.
And right away when I saw that, I said, I said, there's some kind of secret or something going on here, which I really liked. So that really got me, you know, that's one of the things that got me really interested.
What's fun about Champions of Earth is I wrote that, and the co-creator, co-writer on that book is James Ricardo, my good friend of mine. You know, we've been friends forever. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, if you're going to do a superhero book, you know, we were working on putting a book together. I said, you got to do it from a totally different angle. Mm-hmm. And I've always thought what's funny about superheroes is why doesn't anybody ever approach it from the perspective? Now, I like anti-heroes, but I always find when people write anti-hero books, it's kind of like this idea of, well, they drink and they curse and they do this. I'm like, yeah, but there's another side to that. Mm-hmm. You know, why don't you write an anti-hero book from the perspective of, it's not that they're necessarily bad people, but they're just incredibly selfish mm-hmm. and self-centered. Mm-hmm. And imagine how that would affect other people and other real heroes. And it's kind of also a parody on the idea of, if these young, kind of cute superheroes suddenly appeared, the media would jump all over that. Mm-hmm. You know, they would become popular. There would be celebrities. And how do celebrities act? You know, and I kind of took that idea and said, this would be a fun way to do a book. Mm-hmm. And then I took the perspective of, imagine what would it be like to be in a world where if you had these real superheroes mm-hmm. and they got framed for a crime they didn't do mm-hmm. by a bunch of essentially idiots mm-hmm. who got superpowers. Wouldn't that be fun? Mm-hmm. That's how I went about it. And I found to myself, this is such an obvious idea, but why is nobody really doing it? Like, that's what I thought to myself.
Mm-hmm. I've met you at a couple of cons, and the one where I got the books that I – the complete sets, the first three issues of both of your books was at MegaCon Tampa. And I took them back to the place we were staying, and I read them the next day, and I came to talk with you because your booth was near where we were.
Yeah, we were right across from each other. That was awesome. That was a fun coincidence, actually.
Yeah, and I went and talked with you about the fact that right off the bat, I told you about the cover, and I told you about the books, about the different take, which I really liked about it. So, you know, I love somebody who can do something that I haven't read before. And the fact that I've read the first three issues, and I got to tell you, there are surprises along the way, especially when the third book comes along, which I got.
That's my favorite issue, actually.
Yeah, I read that, and when I read that, I was surprised. See, there's a part of the setup that you did that you played with. You had this thing where the two heroes appear, the two characters, shall we say, appear, and there were two other heroes who disappear. And they kind of take their place.
Yep.
You deal with a lot of that continuity when you get to the third issue particularly. And I really loved the way you did things with the characters because they're not particularly happy to be replaced by these folks, as we discover.
No. I remember when James and I were putting this book together, I have this like strong tendency I find. I remember even when I was in school where I would write books and I would have teachers say to me, that book started in a way that I didn't expect this kind of ending. Mm-hmm. And I like that. You know, it's like I tricked you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I got you to lower your kind of guard mm-hmm. so I could have fun with you. And mm-hmm. that's how I approach this book, is it's like you think it's about one thing, but it's really not. Mm-hmm. It's about how would real superheroes deal with the reality? And, you know, genuine – you obviously the characters, the real superheroes in the story is Captain Galaxy and the Crimson Phantom. And then you have the Scarab and Jupiter Man, who are the champions of Earth. And they're charlatans. That's not their real name. They had an agent who gave them that name. And, you know, it's an obvious parody of Superman and Batman with Captain Galaxy and Crimson Phantom. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, if you were this genuinely good person and you really believed in what you believed in, how would you handle the public essentially treating you like garbage and these teenagers coming in and replacing you? That's kind of a fun what if to me. Mm-hmm. But I remember I thought to myself, I have to structure this in a way that it's not obvious from the beginning this is what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And that's – so you're giving the reaction of what I tried to set up, which mm-hmm. is, you know, great. Like that's what I wanted people to feel when they read the book.
Now, I have to tell you, Chris, one of the things you talked to me about at Tampa, I remember, was the title of the book being Champions of Earth, that people were not always happy when they got in to read the story, how different it was from what they expected. So talk a little bit about that. I mean, when you got that kind of reaction, how did you feel?
Well, I feel it's partially fair in the sense that I intentionally kind of deceive people. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like it's called the Champions of Earth, but the title is meant to be ironic. Mm-hmm. That these are the Champions of Earth, but the joke is, unfortunately, these are the Champions of Earth. And I think another thing that people react to is it has a very tongue-in-cheek kind of sense of humor. Mm-hmm. I've also, you know, reviewers have described it as sardonic, mm-hmm. which I also don't mind. And I think some people love it, and some people, it makes them a little uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I think my feeling on it is that, and I've kind of checked out from this aspect of culture, is that I feel like people have become a little, a nice way to put it would be uptight today. Mm-hmm. I think people, certain jokes make them feel very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I think they feel uncomfortable because they think it's funny, but they're not supposed to laugh at it, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I feel like I kind of hit a nerve with certain people in this book because the way I approach Champions of Earth was I approach every single citizen in the city, it's Empire City, as a horrible self-centered monster because that's what makes it funny is when you have superheroes who are incredibly altruistic and they try to do the right thing. If you combine them with people who are incredibly self-centered and narcissistic, it's kind of it's a recipe for comedy, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I think mm-hmm. some people took that as very mean-spirited. I just think it's funny. But a lot of people, I think maybe it rubbed them the wrong way. Mm-hmm. And then I could see it. Like some people – I had a guy at the show, it was such a flattering compliment – He bought the book. He came up to me afterwards. He's like, "This is one of the best things I've ever read." And I'm thinking, "Well, I think you're just being nice, but thank you." And he's like, "I really like Kingdom Come. I put this right next to Kingdom Come." Wow. And I'm thinking, "Well, they're totally different books. It's not even the same kind of book." But thank you for saying that. But other people I've had say to me, "I really like the story." And I'll go, "Well, did you think it was funny?" And they'll go, "I really like the story." You could see like the jokes kind of upset them. You know, but go ahead. You could comment on that.
Oh, well, the thing, one of the parts that I really liked in the first book, and that's something you go back to later on, is them being interviewed on a TV show.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah.
And right away, the humor is hilarious because, you know, there they are being fawned over, and of course, that's exactly what they're hoping for.
Right.
But it's, you know, you get a sense from them right away that this is not necessarily going to be your standard superhero book, which I liked. And that's what I enjoyed the whole thing about it was because, and that even the two of them are different from each other.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead and say the two of them are very different because one of them is kind of is more, I don't know how to describe it, more self-centered or more interested in the accolades than say the other one is, but they both are. And there's a wonderful sequence where they get really angry because they're taken to a fancy restaurant and they want to eat mac and cheese.
That's right.
Which
that's
is
right.
A great thing. Talk about the differences between the two characters. So I think that's kind of interesting.
Well, what's fun about that is that that's a fun point because the two characters are the Scarab and Jupiter Man. And they're actually parodies of me and James when we were younger. Mm-hmm. So the joke is that the Scarab is very innocent. He's very childlike, but he's kind of a jerk. Mm-hmm. But he's not. It's like he's almost like Kramer from Seinfeld in a way, where there's this kind of innocence, but at the same time you're incredibly inconsiderate and a jerk to other people, and other people actually suffer because of your decisions. Mm-hmm. While Jupiter Man is way more self-centered, he's more of like a kind of a darker character who likes being a celebrity. He likes attention, mm-hmm. but he's more aware of what he's doing. And there's a really funny scene in issue 3 mm-hmm. where the Scarab gets hit on by this woman, mm-hmm. And he can't realize, he's too naive to understand that this woman is trying to pick him up. And Jupiter Man is like, well, I will happily sleep with you. And he just comes in. Feels it, and it all ties into the plot, right? So that's the differences between the two of them, is it's kind of this parody of, you have one character, and that really comes out, I feel, later in the book. In the beginning, they're almost the same kind of character. They're similar, but they're different. But by later in the book, you really start to see the differences between the two of them. One character is very childlike, while the other character is kind of just a more self-aware jerk, is the way I would put it. And then they have this manager who's a total jerk. He just takes advantage of them. That's kind of a fun thing about that book, too, is I like the idea of kind of showcasing that you have, you know, these characters who are charlatans, but at the same time, they're also being taken advantage of by somebody else who's their agent.
Which is great. I mean, the agent is a funny guy. I mean, I really like him. He was something very different. He's kind of manipulating them as they go along, but you're right in the sense that they don't often understand exactly what he's doing.
No, they have no idea that he's taking advantage of them because they're young. They're, the characters are supposed to be like within the 16, 15 range. So they rob somebody, and the getaway driver happens to be a former agent, and he sets them up. But the joke is that he writes all the scripts for them. He tells them everything to say on TV. He's using them, but they're too stupid to realize that. That's kind of the joke within itself.
Which is great. I mean, he's an interesting character in himself. I mean, of course, I like the people who interview them as well, and the audience is all – everybody very realistic in that sense, and I really like all that.
No, it's fun. There's always like those fun moments. Like the first issue, right, when first scene, it shows the Champions of Earth saving this girl, Candy Cutie, who's a parody of Katy Perry. And right when they show like this video of – Jupiter Man, you know, killing this guy, Ninja, and he gets like his face melted off. And they're like, wasn't that great? And the audience just starts clapping. Yeah! Like, it's kind of taking away the humanity of what just happened. Which I thought was funny. You know, it's a very fun parody to do.
Well, it's often what superheroes do. I mean, we see them do things that in real life, if we tried to do that, or if we saw somebody do that, we'd be horrified.
Of course. That's kind of the joke. Yeah. Right.
So I like that about that. Now, you've got three issues out. Now, one of the things that's interesting about it, you've got full color covers, but the inside's black and white. Is that more for like expense, or was that the way you wanted the story to go? How did you decide to make that way?
I'm a big black and white guy. I really like black and white. I'm surprised more people don't push it. I think it's because I'm kind of a. I like inking a lot. I like good tones, like manga tones and that kind of stuff. And for me, when I see really good inking and really good toning, I don't like seeing it kind of overwashed by coloring. Or you know, I mean, on the side of toning, it's just gone when you color. And I feel like there are so many amazing inkers out there that when you see their work colored, it takes away from the inks. And I think they're beautiful. Like, for example, look at who's the big inker that inks Jim Lee's stuff?
I don't remember that one, but you know,
there's a guy, I can't believe I forgot his name. I'm almost upset. There's a guy, he's like Jim Lee's inker. I'm gonna look it up right now. I just don't want to get this wrong because I'm gonna get mad at myself later.
Okay, I'll take this little bit out.
Go ahead, take that out. Wait, Jim Lee inker. It's Scott something. Scott Williams. That's his name.
Okay. Yeah.
Do you want me to count in? So you can...
No, we're good. We're ready to go.
So Scott Williams is just amazing inker, and I feel like when you color his work, it takes away from what an amazing job he did. And that's especially in Captives, because Dan Parsons is the inker in Captives, and he's just incredible. And for me, it's like, oh, if you color this book, like you take away from what an amazing job the inker is doing. So I love black and white comics. I think they look phenomenal. Not that I don't love really good colored comics. I think that's phenomenal as well. But I really like black and white books. And then expense is also an aspect. I'm not going to lie. Like, yes, I also like that I can print my books for cheaper. But if it was up to me, I would prefer to print all my books in black and white. Even if, you know, I was selling, you know, a ridiculous amount of copies and I could afford to easily do color, I still would rather do black and white if it was up to me. I think they look great.
Mm-hmm. It's just great. The number three, of course, is a bigger issue. It's $4.99 instead of $3.99 the others. And you've got obviously more pages.
The double size issue, yeah.
It's yeah. It's a great issue. All those are great. Now, if somebody wants to get a hold of Champions of Earth, and this is probably going to apply to Captives as well, but I always want to get this as soon as I can. To get Champions of Earth, is that at your website? Is that
you go to FrightComics.com, and you can get all the Champions of Earth digitally. I'm going to put a link to buy it physically as well.
Okay.
I sell it physically in a few comic book shops in Seattle, but not through my website. But I'm going to start doing it through my website too. Mm-hmm. At first, I was like, oh, I don't want to take away from the sales of these comic book shops. But it's been over a year. I'm like, all right, now I can start selling it on my own. I don't want to. They're doing fine. So
good.
But yeah.
I mean, what's the reception been? I mean, you know, you've got three issues. I'm hoping you're going to do more. We will talk a little about that.
Of Champions of Earth?
Yeah.
That one's a tough one because the three issues end on like an obvious ending. Mm-hmm. But there's very much an opening for a sequel. Mm-hmm. As of right now, there's no plan to do a second volume of Champions of Earth, but I certainly might do it. It really just depends. I don't know. I have to talk to James. Mm-hmm. We might do it. It's very much open door, and I keep getting a very good reception from people, mm-hmm. so there's a good chance I'll probably just do a Kickstarter and see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
The way you ended it, let's just say the final panels is something I have never seen in comics before.
Really? Okay, let's elaborate on that. You've read a lot of comics.
Well, let's just say there's a naked person floating above the earth looking down below. That's true. I've never seen before.
That's true. That's a true statement.
I have never seen that before. And so you can't leave it like that. I got to know what the heck. Now, what's he going to do now? He's not going to just stand there and watch. He's going to do something.
I'll tell you what. So if the plan ideally would be to make two more volumes, and those two volumes explore the reactions of Captain Galaxy and the Crimson Phantom. Mm-hmm. So I kind of tell people the actual main characters of the book mm-hmm. is Captain Galaxy and the Crimson Phantom, because they actually change. Mm-hmm. From the beginning of the story to the end of the story, they go through an arc. Mm-hmm. While the Champions of Earth, they're just there for entertainment and kind of gags. Mm-hmm. They're not really the main characters of the story. They mm-hmm. just happen to be the front people of the story, mm-hmm. you know? So if we do make more, Volume 2 and Volume 3 would primarily focus on how the Crimson Phantom and Captain Galaxy handle everything that happens after the first volume.
Mm.
And then how – also, the joke too is that – so I'm not going to say it because it would be a spoiler if you haven't read the book. Mm. But also how the city deals with the reactions of these two characters from the end of the first –
well, there's one part in particular where our Jupiter guy does. Let's just say that he makes one of the heroes really angry with him by doing something with his girlfriend.
Very valid.
Yeah, and so right there, we're in. That's something. That's another thing where we just don't normally go. People. That's where heroes fear to tread, is to do those kinds of things, especially with other people who are apparently more powerful than you are.
Well, that's the joke, too, is that throughout the whole book, it's implied that Captain Galaxy is this wimp,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then as the story progresses, you realize, no, he's one of the strongest people in the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just he has all this self-restraint.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have these, like, kind of punk kids
mm-hmm.
starting problems with him. Mm-hmm. And you see the result of that.
Yeah, and you know, Jupiter Man is one of my. I'm not sure which one of the ones I like the best, Jupiter Man or the Scarab, but Jupiter Man is the one who seems to get in the most trouble.
Well, he's the biggest jerk of the two. Well, Jupiter Man has when you write scenes,
mm-hmm.
he's the one that pushes the scene forward because he's a jerk. So every time something goes wrong,
mm-hmm.
because of him. You know, the Scarab is just kind of along for the ride, right? Like he's just there, and he's kind of childlike. But Jupiter Man has a lot of the fun. I mean, in the first issue, when they do the origin stories,
mm-hmm.
which to me, like I realized it the other day. I was watching Singing in the Rain,
mm-hmm.
the beginning of Champions of Earth, when the characters tell their origin story, so they tell people one thing, and the caption box say one thing, but the actual flashback says another thing. That, to me, is an obvious kind of homage to Singing in the Rain, where in the beginning of Singing in the Rain, you know, Don Lockwood talks about how he went to this really respectful, you know, place to learn how to dance and all that stuff, and it's not true at all. So it's the same joke.
It's such a wonderful book because, like I said, it's not what I expected out of this kind of a thing. I thought I was going to get a much more serious superhero look, but to go this place where I hadn't been before with characters that are not like, and situations that are not like things that I've seen in comics, to me that was a real joy. And so I really love, that's one of the reasons I would, if I could put my two cents in, I would say go ahead and do something else, even if you have to do one big issue to kind of continue the story. I would recommend do that.
I mean, a lot of people have said that to me, so I keep leaning in that direction because I keep getting that response. And what's funny is I got I had a publisher nice enough to review the book, and they said to me, "We really like what your book is about, but we feel like the way you're drawing it and the way it's drawn is too – I didn't draw it. Some Coco Amboro and Marcelo Salazar. And he goes, the look of the book does not fit the theme of the book.
Well, isn't that the idea?
And I said, well, that's the idea. And they said, we understand that's intentional, but for us, we feel it should look more serious.
No.
And I'm like, well, that's cool. I mean, that's your opinion, but I respectfully disagree with you because for me, something about humor that people don't realize, I think Charlie Chaplin was really good at this. It gets people to lower their guard. When you're funny and you're playful, you can get people to relax, and in a way it opens them to sometimes messages they wouldn't be as comfortable with if you drew it in a different way. You know, it's like it's a parody. It's a satire, right? That's the point.
See, from page to page, I had no idea what you were going to do, which is what I liked. I mean, if I can – before I turn the page, I know what's coming, then I'm bored. So I was not bored. I had no concept as to what you were going to do when I turned the page, what was going to happen on the next page. Which I liked. I mean, that's unusual for me because I've read stuff for a long time, and for me to find something that I could not tell what was going to happen. Now, there are books that do that, but, you know, most of the comics are, to me, ultra predictable, and this one was not, and that's one of the things that I really loved about it, and that's why I'd like to see more.
Well, that's how I approached it. You know, James and I, when we put this book together, I said, we got to do it from this angle and do it this way. And that's what made it fun to me is I feel like the superhero genre has been done to death. You know, it's been beat, you know, let's say keep beating this dead horse. And I'm saying this is one of the last ways to do it that's interesting and unique. And I just thought it was odd that I was the only person who really seems to – me and James, the only people who approach it from this angle. But it seems so incredibly obvious to me. And then what's funny is I even had a close friend of mine who's read a lot of superhero comics. I sent him the book and he read it. He goes, this is so funny, but I've never thought about it like this. And I thought, well, there's been over thousands of issues of superhero comics. But I think part of the reason people shy away from approaching it from kind of this, you know, making a parody of the media and making a parody of superheroes is that I think it comes across as kind of mean. But I think it's funny.
See, I didn't see it as mean. I saw that these as two people who were not necessarily, you know, because I like Batman and I like Superman because they are icons, you know, bigger.
Right. And I like them too. You know, no question. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
But I also saw these guys are very different from that. And I you know, I like my iconic characters, but I also like people who are thrust into a situation who aren't necessarily iconic, because I'm not certain. See, one of the problems with Superman these days is the fact that he's very predictable. We know, because he's so moral, what he's going to do. But your characters, I did not know what they were going to do. And see, that was the thing that made this book. One of the things I really enjoyed about the book was that I had to pay attention and keep reading to find out what was going to happen next, because I didn't know.
Well, you know, it's interesting you point out Superman is that Captain Galaxy is an obvious parody of Superman. And what's fun about him is I actually feel there's a commentary on Superman with the character that he doesn't he doesn't fit in anymore. He's from a society that no longer exists. You know, and that's kind of the joke of Captain Galaxy, is that you're approaching the world from this kind of perspective of, you know, 1940s attitude. You're not part of this world anymore. And that's kind of the joke of Captain Galaxy, is if you looked at the world from the perspective of somebody who was born in the 40s or the 30s in the United States, you don't fit in anymore, and you don't know how to handle living in this world. And that's kind of the joke of Captain Galaxy, is that just like Superman, I feel Superman is out of place today. And there's nothing wrong with that. I like that. But I'm surprised more writers haven't pointed that out, that Superman does not fit in with this world. And then in addition to that, to take it a step further, not only does he not fit in, he's from another planet. So wouldn't that be a fun thing to approach and point out? And I think some writers have kind of touched it a little bit. But have you ever thought about how horrible it would feel to be a person from not only another planet, but your kind of moral compass and your idea of how the world works is from a bygone era? Is that a fun area to approach? I think it's a great thing to approach as a writer, but I think nobody really seems to do it, which is odd to me.
So you've got to sell Superman month to month. But Captain Galaxy actually says in book number 3, and I had to turn to it when you start talking about it, everything's different now except me.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite lines in the book.
Which it just caught me when you were talking about that. That's exactly what – you actually bring that point out in the third book. And so I like that. I like to read Superman. I enjoy him, but I'm always, you know, it's like I would love to live on the Star Trek, Starship Enterprise and Next Generation, because it's so safe. But I would much rather watch Deep Space Nine, because it's not safe.
Right.
You know, and so that's the feeling to me is that with Superman, I would love to for Superman to, you know, to be this character, but on the other hand, it's dull, you know.
Right. And that's the thing too, is that it's I think everybody knows it, but nobody wants to say it for some reason.
You don't dare. How many decades have they been making Superman? You don't dare go there.
Right, exactly. And I'll be perfectly honest, if I worked at DC, I wouldn't either. You know, it's like, this thing makes money, leave it alone. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And every time they try, they make it a disaster. You know, it's like, that's who Superman is. But let's be honest with ourselves here for a second. If you had that kind of attitude towards life, it would be a hard life for you. Today.
Yeah. That's,
you know,
true.
And I think a lot of people don't. I actually see Superman, in my opinion, as a very tragic character. I feel bad for him. Whenever I read Superman comics, or I see, like, if you watch the show Smallville from back in the day, and I always feel bad for Superman. I'm going, you have this very strong belief system that hurts you, and you don't fit in, and you're not even from here, and he has this overwhelming guilt in a way. He's so, like, almost ashamed of being so powerful. I think it's sad. And that's how I approach Captain Galaxy, is I see Superman as a tragic character, and I'm surprised more people don't point that out. He's a very sad character, and I wouldn't want to be him. I wouldn't want to trade places with him today.
Did you ever read Mark Waid's Irredeemable?
I think so.
Irredeemable was Superman as if he was suddenly decided, okay, enough of this goody-goody stuff. You know, and he basically...
I haven't read that, but I want to
now. Oh, if you get a chance, you might kind of find that interesting, because that was Mark Waid's attempt to try to go in a different direction with Superman. Now, Injustice, the video game, also has Superman going a different direction.
Oh, I like that game. Yeah, that's great.
I love that. In Irredeemable, it's hard to get in without spoiling the stuff. But apparently that was what Mark Waid wanted to do with Superman, but DC, of course, wouldn't allow it. So they went and he did it somewhere else in the broom... And call it
which I totally understand. Like, I get it. If I worked at DC, I would say the same thing. Go ahead.
Well, if you get to the final issue, Mark Waid makes it very clear who this character is meant to be.
Oh, that's funny.
So I won't, more than that, I won't say. But it was a really good book. I really loved it because, you know, like we're talking, I think one of the toughest jobs in comics today is writing Superman.
Oh, I would hate to do it. I would hate to do it. I would do it, and I'm sure they would heavily edit me. You know, I would do it. They would come in and be like, you can't do this, you can't do that. I'm like, all right, well, you know, whatever you want me to do. That's one thing I find odd about, I'm sure a lot, I already can hear it in the back of my head. Comic book creators would get mad at me for saying this. Mm-hmm. I feel like when you work on established properties, you need to respect that somebody owns these and they want you to do it a certain way. Mm-hmm. So for me, if I want to do X, Y, and Z with Superman and the people who owned it said no, I would go, okay, well, I mean, it's yours. Mm-hmm. I understand your perspective. You're here to make money too. So why would I do it? Mm-hmm. Right. And that's, mm-hmm. that's kind of the frustrating thing I feel for comic books, with big, you know, the big two, Marvel and DC, is that there's really only so much you can do. Mm-hmm. And for fair reasons. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why the B and C characters get to have more fun. Mm-hmm. That's why you can take a character like Deadpool, who was completely different when he was created, mm-hmm. and then Joe Kelly and a bunch of other people came along and completely changed him. No one would ever do that to an A-lister character. Mm-hmm. You couldn't. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's fun to write, you know, Champions of Earth the way we did, is mm-hmm. that we have the freedom to do whatever we want. So
I had a friend of mine who was – used to write scripts, you know, in the hope of somehow getting him on Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And one of them hated Jadzia Dax. And she would always write in the script that Jadzia would die.
Right.
And we said, do you actually expect these people to buy the script and one of their lead characters dies? Do you think they're going to actually buy it? Well, they'll see the wisdom of getting rid of her in my script. Yeah, sure. You bet.
Right, right, right. Let's throw all that money away, yeah. and let's piss off, you know, the person who plays the character. Like, I think there's something about, and it's like, I'm not trying to knock creative people. Mm-hmm. There's something about creative people when they don't think about it from the business side of things. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, look, these people are here to make money. Mm-hmm. And not just that, they have fans and they have this and they have that. I remember once, this is going to sound so obscure, but a long time ago, I met this guy, and there was this like established role playing game called. You ever play any Dungeons and Dragons, anything like that?
Yeah.
Okay, so did you ever play a game called Vampire the Masquerade?
No.
Have you heard of it? White Wolf published it.
Honestly, no, I haven't heard of it before.
It was like a bigger role playing game, but it was all, you know, undead creatures. So the idea is you play as a vampire, right? Mm-hmm. And apparently they wrote books based on this. I don't know, I never read them. And this one guy went into this whole thing. We were all teenagers at the time. And he went into this whole thing about how I have this whole idea where I'm going to write this book where I'm going to create a character and he's going to kill all the characters in their franchise and he's going to be the best character. And even then I said to him, why would they say yes to that? And he said to me, what do you mean? It's like such a cool twist. I'm like, you killed off all their established properties. Yeah. Why would they say yes? Yes. He's like, because it's so clever. I'm like, no, you think it's clever.
See, it's so true. I mean, you know, see, this is why what you're doing, and you're right to the idea of respecting the property, I think is a good one. Because, you know, honestly, what would happen if somebody came along and said to you, I want to write Champions of Earth, and I'll write it from you? How would you take that? You know, would you want them to go and kill your characters and then decide to go with the other ones?
Of course not. Especially mm-hmm. Let's also step back and point this out that nobody thinks about. These companies have invested literally millions of dollars mm-hmm. into these characters. Mm-hmm. For you to turn around and go, yeah, I'm going to burn that bridge. Why would somebody say yes to that? It's almost like as if I opened a restaurant and it cost me $10 million mm-hmm. and it's been around for 50 years. And then somebody's like, we're going to burn it down and open a burger place. Why would I say, oh, okay, sounds great. Like,
if you want to do something like that, make up your own. You know, start your own thing.
Your own burger place. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, so that's where I am very much. I if there's going to be comments on this podcast, I can see them coming, attacking me. You know, like, oh, how dare you? This. It's like, look, you know, you have to respect the fact that these things are worth millions and millions and millions of dollars, yep. and people have invested millions and millions of dollars into them. Yep. And that's why when I do kind of the ideas I did in Champions of Earth, I understand. DC and Marvel would never publish this. Mm-hmm. DC would never do this, you know, mm-hmm. and for fair reasons. Mm-hmm. But that's why it's fun to kind of take the character and take it from a direction that you could as an independent creator.
Right.
You know, so that's how I approached it.
Well, this is why I want more, because I want to see something I haven't read before. You know, I want to see different kinds of things. I mean, you may not want these characters to survive all the time. You may want something to happen to one of them, but that's your decision. That's not somebody else's. And, you know, if you decide to take one of them out, it's going to be real interesting to see what you would do. So this is why I would really like to see more Champions of Earth as time goes along. I'd love to see what you do, because I'm sure it would be very unexpected.
Well, you're selling me on it. I'll talk to James. It's always floating in the background. I remember when we were at Tampa, mm-hmm. it was that one fan. He just kept going on. He's like, oh, you got to make more. You gotta make more. I'm like, we'll see. I don't know. He's like, you gotta do it. And he was like, I remember him saying to me, do you have a Patreon? I said, no, I don't really have one. You gotta get one so I can give you money. Make more of this. You know, he was just so into it. Mm-hmm. And it was flattering. Well, I'm not gonna lie, but we'll see. It's not just me. James is also involved. It's not a one man team. So
well, you can't leave him. This naked man floating out in space, in my opinion. You got to do something. I mean, he can't just stand there looking at something for the rest of eternity.
That's a great hook. Naked man floating in space by Champions of Earth. That's a great hook.
Well, it's a great book. I really love it. I hope there is going to be more. I really do. You have to keep me informed as things go along.
Thank you. I do appreciate it. That's very flattering and nice of you to say.
So. We should move on to your other book, though, called Captives, which is 180 degrees the other direction. I mean,
totally different.
It's totally absolutely different. It's nothing like Champions of Earth, which is interesting. Describe what Captives is about. Sorry, if you had to give a TV Guide version, what is it?
I'll give the incredibly short version. Twilight Zone meets Ray Harryhausen meets slight manga undertones of shonen. If I had to sum it up, with a love letter to Jack Kirby and lots of other people from that time and that style.
It's interesting, because why is it called Captives? Let's answer that question, because when I read the book, I came away going, why is it called Captives?
I feel like if I tell you, it would spoil the story.
Oh, okay. Well, then, okay.
I'm willing to tell you, though.
Okay.
So the idea is that the characters are captives of their own ambitions.
Ah, okay.
They're literally enslaved to – they have such strong desires. Mm-hmm. They're willing to put themselves in a death trap to get them.
Okay, so that explains a lot, because you're right. A lot of these characters, they're on the same mission for very, very different motivations.
Yeah, and they're willing to die for it, because that's how motivated and kind of – not every character is different, but for the most part, the theme is that they are captives of their own desires, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and they cannot escape them. They have such a strong – compulsion to fulfill them, mm-hmm. they're willing to die for it.
Now, this is set in a medieval time, as there's lots of magic involved. There are monsters. It's a very different kind of a book. And of course, right now I got to ask you, how do you pronounce Z-A-R-D-H-E? Zardy?
I pronounce it Zard.
Zard, okay, because that's one of the main things involved in the story is the Zard. And yes. It's really interesting how that character or creature comes to be, and then there are more that come along as we go. And it's a really interesting tale, because, you know, a lot of medieval stuff, I've been down this road a lot too, but this time I had no idea. What I really like is what the basics are, and there's a basic to this kind of story. There's a princess that people want to marry or want to be right. with, and a variety of people want to do it for various reasons. And there's the one guy who's a blonde kid, apparently, and he wants to do it out of true love. And right. There's a whole bunch of others who want to for other reasons. But what goes on is, you know, how different people approach the same project.
Right.
Which I really like.
And also, what's fun about the story, too, is it's also heavily inspired by – have you ever read the book or watched the movie Battle Royale?
Yes.
Okay, so there's also that element in there. And I tell people, if you've never seen Battle Royale, then Hunger Games. Like, what happens when you throw a bunch of people who have, you know, conflicting interests into a death trap, but they have to kind of work together to survive? How would that play itself out? And what's kind of also fun about that book is that you have all these characters who enter this labyrinth that no one's ever returned from. And they essentially all know it's a suicide mission,
mm-hmm.
but they do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying, if you were that kind of person, what kind of morality would you have?
Mm-hmm.
Would you wouldn't be more likely than not this kind of standing upright person.
Mm-hmm.
So the majority of the cast in the story of Captives are not your traditionally good people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, for me, a very fun way to write the book. I would say probably the closest thing to your kind of classical hero
mm-hmm.
is the character of Robert,
mm-hmm.
who is Simon's brother,
mm-hmm.
Because he's trying to save his brother from killing himself, basically, by going in what he believes is a death trap.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But aside from him and maybe one other character, you're surrounded with characters who are very self-absorbed
mm-hmm.
and very... I don't know. It's also kind of I'm trying to think of a way to say it. It's a way to understand the human condition,
mm-hmm.
you know? And one thing I don't like about fantasy comics when I see people create them
mm-hmm.
is they tend to do this thing where they think people who grow up in this environment
mm-hmm.
think the way people think today.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing further from the truth. If you grew up in a world where you were constantly on the verge of starvation
mm-hmm.
and you were constantly on the verge of being threatened and killed by an invading army and all these kind of things, you wouldn't have the same values and philosophy, you know, as people today. It would be totally different.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I write these characters, is I put myself – I know their backstory,
mm-hmm.
so I put myself in their shoes, and I would say, how would I see the world?
Mm-hmm.
How would I see things?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I write the characters. And I remember there's – I really like this actually when people review Captives.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a tendency in reviewers is they'll say that I can't stand the main character. he's such a jerk, or I can't stand this person, or I can't stand that person.
Mm-hmm.
And I always think to myself, have you ever watched film noir?
Mm-hmm.
Like, these aren't always perfect people, but that's what makes them interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I feel, anyway. Mm-hmm. An interesting idea to explore.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the basic story, and it moves along, is you know, they're trying to decide who can be with the princess. And I really like the fact that they just, when they come into different situations, some of them are not really interested in doing things the way others are. And so they kind of have to struggle amongst themselves how to move forward. They come across a great big statue of the king, and there's a debate going on as to whether or not that is the king or is that a statue of the king.
Right. Well, there's an element of mystery. And so essentially when you go inside this maze, like
mm-hmm.
nobody really knows how this maze works because no one comes out.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all this hearsay of what is true and what is not, you know, and they come across a statue and some people believe one thing is true. Other people are like, well, that's BS,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is understandable because there has to be a certain level of skepticism
mm-hmm.
in everybody, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's good. That's the kind of thing that I like about the book is that, again, I don't know where you're going. I'm not sure. I mean, is it the statue or is it the king? I've read the three issues and I'm still not entirely sure if, you know, which way that went, you know, as far as that character goes, or if we're going to see that again or how that's going to be resolved. So I like that about a story. I like a story that keeps me guessing. And, you know, I like the art. I thought the pacing's really good.
Oh, it's gorgeous. Oh, it's yeah. gorgeous.
I love the pacing. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, I couldn't be happier with the artistic team on that book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Robert Ahmad and Dan Parson, who worked on Star Wars forever, and I read a ton of his – when he was inking Star Wars Old Republic, I read so many of those books.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just thrilled to have him on the book.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about like a group of people that get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just feel like whenever I do something or I write something in the script, Robert just sees it in a way that is so close to how I see it. And if it's not, he'll add something to it that I never thought of.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan – person, like, he has such a – I find every person who works on Captives
mm-hmm.
has a very much appreciation for old movies.
Mm.
You know, it's like, oh, we love all these old adventure films, or we like movies from this time, and you can see it, and I feel everybody on working on it has a click. We all agree. Mm-hmm. And actually, the second volume is in production right now.
Oh.
So issues 1 through 6 have already been penciled.
Oh.
And Dan is currently wrapping up issue 4, but I hired a new artist to start working on issue 7. And he just wrapped up issue 7 right now. Mm-hmm. So the second volume is drawn by an artist named I'm gonna mispronounce his name, Giancarlo Caracuza, mm-hmm. who did a lot of indie stuff, DC Marvel stuff. He's done some stuff for Image, IDW. Mm-hmm. He's a phenomenal artist, and he also, because Robert and I are actually doing a side project together. Mm-hmm. It is Halloween. I guess I'll announce it. Mm-hmm. Robert Ahmad and I are doing a Headless Horseman comic together. And that's in production right now. So Robert wanted to work on that, so I hired this other artist, and he's doing a phenomenal job as well. And I could see we kind of have the same appreciation for certain things.
Mm. I should point out, though, that we're recording this on Halloween. It's not going to air on Halloween. This will come out a little later. But just to let you know, I just thought, of course, Fright Comics, and we're going to record on Halloween. It couldn't be a better timing to talk with you about that. So,
Yes.
I'm glad to hear the Captives is going to keep moving. So issue 4, do you have a schedule as far as the future issues, how they're going to work?
I would say December.
Okay.
If I had to guess. What's tricky about Captives right now is that Dan is so busy.
Mm-hmm.
He's just working on a ton of stuff. He goes to so many conventions. Mm-hmm. I would say on average, as of right now, he produces maybe 5 pages a month of inks. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if I really asked him to, I could probably do a lot more. But I'm pretty laid back about it right now. So I would say issue 4 will probably come out in December. And then issue 5, if I'm going to guess, February.
Okay.
But issue 7 is done.
Mm.
I got the finished pages just recently.
Mm.
So issue 8 is going to go into production in probably January or December. Mm. And issue 7, the artist I hired right now, Giancarlo, he does the pencils and the inks.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I feel like once we get up to issue 6, mm-hmm. there's going to be probably a solid 4 or 5 issues waiting to be published.
Mm.
So though I feel like once I start getting to later issues, I'll probably start publishing on a schedule of bi-monthly.
Oh, that'd be good, because it's nice if you can have something come out on a basis that people understand.
Yeah.
You know, if it's not going to be until 6 months from now, just tell people, and they're pretty understanding. But if it just sort of floats out whenever it feels like it, and we don't know when it's coming, well, a lot of people tend to move on to other projects, and I sure hate to see that happen to Captives.
I totally agree with that, and I totally understand it. It's just one of these things where I feel like with Captives, especially with Fright in general, it's been for the past year, it's really been a soft launch, is how I describe it to people. You know, I've been making comics for a long time, like quietly in the shadows, you know, and then when I finally started putting them out, I took it very easy. You know, I didn't want to overextend myself. I wanted to kind of feel out the market, and I'm still kind of in that underground phase now, which is great. I kind of enjoy it. I would, of course, ideally the goal is to get out of, you know, being unknown and obscure, but there's something really fun for being unknown and obscure. You know, maybe I'll be unknown and obscure my whole life, but regardless, I do very much enjoy it. So as of right now, I feel like I'm still kind of in that startup phase,
mm-hmm.
You know, but it will kind of take off. I mean, it is nice to have six finished issues of books you put out, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I like to tell people I'm not a number one guy, you know, where people put out one issue and they never put out another one. That's not me.
Mm-hmm.
I can guarantee you more is going to come out. So
mm-hmm. Now, rest assured. If we want to get Captives, of course, it's probably the same thing. Go to FrightComics.com.
You go to FrightComics.com, but which is also great now and is probably going to be my main kind of distribution area for putting out books digitally.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on Comixology now.
Oh, good.
So Captives number 1 is available on Comixology. I'm going to have to submit Captives number 2 and number 3 mm-hmm. to Comixology as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll probably do that within the next few weeks. It's just, it takes a certain amount of time to get on Comixology. They have to, mm-hmm. I guess, kind of redo the pages with the guided view.
Mm-hmm.
So, but Comixology number 1 is available on Captives number 1 is available on Comixology. What am I saying? Captives number 1 is available on Comixology right now.
Yeah.
And that's going for 99 cents.
Oh.
And then Captives number 1 and 2 are on sale right now if you want the DRM version for free on FrightComics.com. And you can get Captives number 3 for 99 cents.
Oh, so. Cool. Very cool. Well, I highly recommend it because it's very different from stuff that I've read, and in a good way. It's not that it's bad. It's very engrossing. The characters are interesting. the situation, the pacing, it's all very good and very, it moves along quite rapidly. So it keeps me going. And I sat down and I was like through them. I was like, oh, now where's the rest?
Right.
Kind of stuff.
Right.
So I like that. When a book does that to me, when I get to the last page and I go, now what? Then
well, that's,
I'm interested.
I appreciate the compliment. Again, like it's for me to – I think the thing about when you make comics is that you're kind of in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I really ideally – I make comics for myself. But I want to make them accessible to other – it's almost like I make them for myself mm-hmm. if I was somebody who walked into a comic book store.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like if I walked into a comic book store, what kind of book would I want to read? But I obviously want to make it – you know, I don't know everything about this book. I want to introduce everything. I want to set everything up. So when you're doing that, you don't necessarily know if other people are going to respond to it.
Mm-hmm.
But you just do it. You know, it's like it's almost a strong compulsion where it's almost in a way kind of arrogant where you're saying to yourself, I know it's good. I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do it like this.
Mm-hmm.
So when other people start to give you that kind of positive feedback of, you know, like the reactions you're giving me to everything I put together is exactly how I wanted people to respond. You know, of, oh, I want more. And, oh, this is a different way to do this. And this is that. That's how I did it on purpose. But to get that feedback, you know, is kind of, it's nice. You know, it's uplifting.
Well, see, you're a storyteller, though. See, and for you not to do it would be the hard part.
You know, it's hard to go through the day.
You want to tell stories, and you have stories to tell. And so this is what you're doing is you're telling your stories, and you're getting the stories out there. I'm sure you've got other ones that you've got.
Oh, yeah, I got plenty, yeah.
Yeah, you want to tell. And so the thing of it is I think that somebody like you is the kind of person that we should support because you're the kind of person that's going to come up with interesting stories and do things in a different way, and we could certainly use that.
Well, ideally, right? You know, I think what's very strange to me about comic books, and I have a hard time understanding it in independent comics. I understand it from the big two. I don't understand it in independent comics is this tendency to try to seek out what's popular
mm-hmm.
and mimic it
mm.
to try to get sales.
Mm.
That makes no sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's I'm going, look, you know, it's comic books. You're not going to make a ton of money. Why are you trying to just replicate what's popular to make money? I don't understand it. You know, you can go work a real job.
Mm-hmm.
You could go be a plumber or an that was a big thing. And I remember I actually read Cerebus Guide to Self-Publishing when I was really young,
mm-hmm.
and it blew my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing in that is Dave Sim talks about how if you want a steady paycheck and you want X, Y, and Z, go be a plumber.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and my dad is a plumber,
mm-hmm.
and I, you know, I get it. It's
mm-hmm.
it's just this. So for me, I don't understand why independent comics isn't full of all these different approaches towards things and different ideas and different ways to do things. It's just full of all these kind of
mm-hmm.
rehashing the same idea 1,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
And what I also find is really common in comics now, which is I think is a little upsetting, is it's upsetting for me when I see it in independent comics. I get why I see it in mainstream comics is whatever is trending on Twitter that week is what ends up in comics.
Mm.
Or whatever is relevant that month is what ends up in comics. And I'm saying I understand why Marvel and DC are doing it. I think it's boring.
Mm-hmm.
I would never do it if I was the editor at Marvel and DC.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
But when I see independent comics do it, I just think it's sad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like how many people get the opportunity to make comic books, let's be honest with ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to work for a company like Dark Horse or IDW or Image or Boom or whomever, and you waste that opportunity with doing the same old stupid idea, which has been done 10,000 times
mm-hmm.
in a boring way.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
That's we've got plenty of other people who want to do that.
I don't get it. It makes no sense to me. So if you're if somebody out there wants to do the 12,000th version of the same book, send me an email and explain it to me.
Speaking of that, it's a perfect intro. If people want to keep up with what you're doing, now you've got frightcomics.com, obviously. Are there other ways that people can do that? Are you on Twitter, Facebook?
I'm definitely going to start doing all that now because I very much held off on creating a Facebook page and a Twitter and all that because I wanted to have my book on Comixology before I started doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But now that Captives is on Comixology, I would say keep an eye out on Facebook because I'm going to start up a Facebook page for Fry Comics. You know, I'll probably do it immediately so people who hear this can go on my Facebook page. keep an eye on Twitter. I'm probably going to do it immediately for the same reason. And then also I'd say the best way I like to do it is subscribe to my mailing list.
Okay.
I put out a mailing list about, I'd say, once every 6 weeks or 7 weeks. Mm-hmm. I try not to spam people. Mm-hmm. And that's probably the most consistent way to keep up with what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And the way you can do that is either email me, just go to frightcomics.com and go to my contact section, mm-hmm. and say, put me on your mailing list. Another way to do it is just, you know, download some books from my store, and you can download the free ones and just click subscribe to newsletter, and it'll automatically put you in.
Mm. Cool.
But plus that, I would say I'm probably going to really start pushing social media soon, because now I feel like I have a fair amount of work, mm-hmm. and I have my book on Comixology, so mm-hmm. now I can really start pushing that envelope. Mm-hmm. So that's the way I would say I would do it. I remember when I was at Tampa, James said to me, Alex, you're really good at making comics. You're really good at what you do. You suck at the internet side of things. Because you need to start kind of being open to having a Patreon. You need to start being open to doing these things. Because like I have this kind of very – I want to almost go as far as saying old-fashioned attitude, mm-hmm. about making creative things. I feel like I want to do it, and I don't want to be obnoxious about it. Mm-hmm. I don't want to shove my work in people's faces. Mm-hmm. I don't want to spam people. Mm-hmm. I feel like my work speaks for itself. Mm-hmm. And when you find it, it should be a treat. I don't want it to be, oh, that guy who keeps hassling me to look at his stupid book. Mm-hmm. You know, so I find I have this tendency to push away from it. But I'm going to try to overcome that. Just doing what I'm going to do on social media.
One thing I want to ask you to do is to spell your last name, because it's pronounced Bankita, but it's not necessarily spelled the way people might expect it. So would you please spell your last name so people can find you?
Yes. So Alexander or Alex, and then Bankita, B as in boy, A-N-C-H-I-T-T-A. And you'll find stuff. Actually, it's kind of fun to reach a point where you could Google yourself, and it's fun. I do that now. I'm like, I'm going to Google me today. And then Bleeding Cool was really nice enough to do an article about me, which was great.
Cool. I have to tell you a funny story. Was that I collect stories about people named Wayne Hall.
You really?
Yeah,
an awesome story.
I'll tell you a couple of quick ones, ones I can remember off the top of my head. There was a guy driving in the middle of nowhere, and his girlfriend decided, it was a convertible, decided to stand up and take her top off. They drove 100 miles an hour past a police car.
100 miles an hour, topless girl?
Yep, past a police car. And, of course, they got pulled over. And, of course, the name of the guy driving the car was Wayne Hall. And then there was a guy at
you're covering up for something you did.
No,
you're trying to pretend it wasn't you right there.
I'm not nearly that creative. I can't come up with this.
Perfect alibi. Okay, all right.
There was another guy that was – a guy went into a automotive place, and he wanted to buy a car, and he wanted to pay cash. And he said to the guy, how much would I have to bring? And he told him like $10,000. So the guy went back. He gets the $10,000. He gives it to the guy at the dealership. And the guy says, I'm going to go take the car around the corner. We'll make some adjustments, and then I'll bring your car out for you and you take it home. Well, he drives it around the corner, and the guy's waiting there an hour, waiting 2 hours, waiting 3 hours. No sign of it. And the guy finally goes to one of the salespeople and says, what happened to the guy that I gave the $10,000 to? Oh, well, he was working here, and he was only here, worked here a couple hours, and he quit and took off with the car. Now, guess who the person was, the name of the person was who gave the guy $10,000 cash? His name was Wayne. He was Wayne Hall.
The same Wayne Hall with the topless girlfriend.
Yeah. Well, now there's another one. I'll tell you one last story. Is I was there was a guy that was working at a motel, and he got very.
Where do you find these stories?
What's happening? Well, you talked about Googling. I put my name in as a Google thing, and I get emails every once in a while telling me. Now, usually I get Wayne Hall is the name of a dormitory at a college or something like that, or Wayne Gretzky in the Hall of Fame or something like that.
Yeah.
Every once in a while I get a good story, and this is another one. He was working at this motel, and he got angry at the manager, and the manager fired him. So he went right home, got his rifle, went right back, and shot the manager.
What?
Yeah, seriously, this is real life news story. And the name of the guy that was the manager was Wayne Hall. So
you just told me the beginning and end of someone's life. This guy one day had like a teenage girlfriend. They drove 100 miles an hour. Then he went to buy a car. So that was the peak of his life. That was the pinnacle, the zenith, if you will.
Yeah.
And then after that, he tried to buy a car, failed. And then he worked at a Motel 6, you know.
Yep.
Got killed. I don't have any stories like that about my name because my name is actually my father is from Sicily. His name was Shire Bankita, so he actually cut that top part off and it just became Bankita. So I don't know anybody with my last name. But if I Google or Facebook Shire Bankita, a bunch of people in Sicily come up.
Okay.
You know? So I don't have any fun stories about my last name.
See, my name is very common, and so there's lots of people with it, and they tend to get into terrible trouble. So I always tell people, don't name your child Wayne Hall. Just don't do it. Just
name
don't
him, do it. Name him Bob Hall. Joe.
Anything but Sue, you know, kind of the old songs and the thing. Boy, Alex, it's been great fun talking with you. I probably should let you get going here so you can get back to creating comics. But
yeah,
it's
right.
Captives,
right.
And it's Champions of Earth and FrightComics.com. And we will talk with you again, Alex. This was great fun, and we'll have to do this another time. I really look forward to that.
Definitely, definitely. Well, I'm not going anywhere, so we'll definitely reach out again.
Okay, we'll do.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this week. Please be back next time when I'll be speaking with another great comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.